You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Okay, we are here for another New Churches podcast, episode 8, Kazillion, and we're going to talk today about the issue of funding. And I don't know, you know, this is a perennial issue. We can always come back to funding people, funding too. We can have fun with funding. People always have questions, and it's interesting to watch and see how this has sort of changed over time. And that's what we're talking about today. So we have a friend today. I have one friend, but my friend, Warren Bird. Warren is a writer and a researcher of churches. He's authored or co-authored 33 books on church leadership, including, it's either two or three we did together, including Emotionally Healthy Church, Prepare Your Church for the Future. And right now, he's had different roles over the years, but right now he's doing a great job, and we're very thankful for the work they're doing at the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, and he is the Vice President of Research and Equipping. He's doing a great job there, and they're an important ministry that we want you to be engaged and involved with, and you can do that at your church level, your organization, and more. Warren, good to see you.
Ed, it's always fun to have a conversation because you and I go lots of places in our conversations that most interviewers don't take me. So I look forward
to
the adventure.
Well, we've actually, so here's the fun thing. I mean, how many people in the world can I say that I've written a book on church planting with? It's you and Daniel M. are the only two people. And we wrote a book that was very cleverly titled in 2000 and what was it, seven, I guess.
Yes, back when H1N1 was just becoming a thing, and we were
that's
wondering,
right. That's right. My daughter got, it was swine flu, for those of you who aren't familiar with it. My daughter was one of the early people who got swine flu, and they shut down the church and the county. This was, so we walked through this before. We knew. So, and it didn't become the big deal that COVID did, but so we're writing this book called Viral Churches, and the publisher had this creative idea to, we wanted things to go viral. There was H1N1, but you know, the things of going viral people were talking about. We wanted church planting to go viral. The subtitle is How Church Planters Become Movement Makers or something like that. I'm not 100%
sure.
So Warren has been writing, researching, and more. So we've actually partnered with Ryan, where did that come from? We partnered with Warren. And we were, because we one of the things we have here is the Church Planting Leadership Fellowship. So as some of you know, we've been doing these every few years study on church planting. We didn't do it. Warren did it. We kind of directed all of our energy towards getting people to Warren's survey. And very excited. We got a couple of briefings already with our Church Planting Leadership Fellowship here at the Church Multiplication Institute. But tell us, Warren, the title of the survey is The New Faces of Church Planting and Multi-Siting. I'm not sure that's a word, but nevertheless, you make up words. What are you writing on? What are the five categories? Kind of just start unpacking it for us.
So we had 2,700 church planters, and Ed, until this survey came out, you and I had bragging rights to say we had compiled the largest research project on church planting across North America. And that was a few years ago. So now it's time to go cross-denominational, networking and all that, and find out, okay, what is the lay of the land for church planting, especially with a pandemic? But there are a lot of perennial issues. So we found out so much that we broke it down into five reports, all free downloads. And the topics are funding, which is what we're going to talk about today, ethnicity and race, what trends are we seeing with new churches that are multiracial, pandemic, which we'll talk about in another podcast. Did the pandemic change the trajectory of church plants or multi-site campuses for that matter? Church plant versus multi-site, which is cheaper, which does one have more bang for the buck? Does one have more converts for the effort and all kinds of things? And the final one, multiplication, replication. What are the best predictors of a church's ability to multiply itself? Fascinating findings. By the way, they're all free downloads at ecfa.org slash surveys, plural, and have at it. But Ed and I are going to unpack today the hundreds, if not 2,700 different people that responded to different questions on how is this thing funded? Where does the money come from? How does it sustain? Does that have any implications for conversion, attendance, growth, and so forth?
Yeah, so it's fun to go to the ECFA. So go to the ECFA. See what I did there, and you can get more information. We'll put a link in the show notes as well to be able to go, so you can download all of these reports. Okay, so today we're going to focus on funding. A future episode, we're going to talk about how the pandemic impacted church planning. That's a lot of people are asking questions about. So so let's talk, because you got some new categories on the pie charts. You've talked about auxiliary and government grants, which is not something we normally have talked about. But we're gonna go to those categories first. But would you give us first a big overview? And I mean, for those of you don't know, Warren's planted a church. Warren's been in this space for a long time. What are the kinds of things that our audience are going to want to know about church planning? The New Churches Podcast is the most listened to church planning podcast in the world. And probably the biggest question is often funding. What do we need to know? What did you learn?
Well, Ed, let's start at the beginning. How much does it cost to start a church? Well, really, you could say zero. If you do it as a Bible study or study group out of your home or apartment and you grow it from there, in a lot of ways, you can start with zero. But if you say, well, let's develop a core group, let's rent a place to meet in so that we're not limited by the seating capacity or the zoning issues associated with my house or apartment, now we're starting to talk money. Okay, where does that money come from? Does it come from your core group that you're developing, from other churches, from a denomination? Does it come from your own side jobs or your own savings or your spouse's income or your relatives or an outside? And you mentioned I use the category auxiliary, and by that I meant like coffee shops or retail and even government grants. And by the way, those last two categories were the smallest slices on the pie chart.
For sure.
The coffee shops and the like were 3% of monies came in that way, and government grants were 1%. We could talk about those because those can all be a viable exception and pathway, but I'm just telling you not what's right or wrong, but what is the most common and what's the most normal. And the biggest slice of the pie is the core group that you're raising up who buy in not only to the vision of we need to reach people for Christ in this particular location, in this particular way, but let my pocketbook support that. Often there, and that was 26%, by the way, of the funding, a quarter of it. Often one or more local churches, as in a sending church, to say, let's send out this person to start, or part of my denomination, let's give to a general fund, which in turn gives back to, or regional fund, which gives back to the church planner. Both of those are 19%. So far we've covered about half the typical cost. But then I said, one of my categories I hadn't seen before is I thought, okay, the churches that I've been part of planting, I hit all of my relatives, you know, in other cities and everything else. It's like, hey, would you help out your son, cousin, nephew, whatever? And to my surprise, 15% came from the primary household, primary leader's household savings or earnings, but 6% came from the primary leader's relative.
Interesting.
And and then we had, for those of you who are trying to add this up without looking at the download the pie chart.
I was told there'd be no math.
Okay, the remaining 12% were other, which just shows all the creative ways that people use to fund a church plant. Now, Ed, we could dig deeper on any of those. For example, you mentioned the government grants. So in some ways, that can be a tail wagging the dog if that's not a fit for you. But I have known someone who was like worked in the mayor's office of a small city and had all kinds of connections. And so it was a very natural thing. Or whose best friend, who was a layperson who helped plant the church, happened to write grants as a living. And the challenge was, would you like to write grants for Jesus and help us figure out what monies might be available for starting a church and reaching a community and serving a community? And that happens. Ed, you and I know a pastor friend in the South Bronx. The church is maybe 10 years old and 200 people, and yet he's figured out he's got like a $5 million grant to work with a charter school and to do different things. But before being called into ministry, his background was in the education world, and he had all kinds of connections, and that makes sense. It's kind of like, to me, the Moses question where God, you know, Moses is giving all his whining and giving all his excuses, and God ultimately says, Moses, what's in your hand? Moses is like, all I got is a shepherd's staff. Okay, I can use that, Moses. Let me show you what I can do with a shepherd's staff. And the rest is history.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, we say government grants for the first time, you know, we talked about that. I was like, it's not, the government's not granting you money to plant an evangelistic church, new church, but there are connections. And one of the things we see people doing now is sometimes starting a nonprofit, and then the church is sort of related and engaged with that nonprofit. And there can be space there, you know, both private grants and, you know, depending upon how you're serving the marginalized community, for example, could be some government grants. That gets complicated, though, correct?
Correct. And yeah. And it's messy from day one, which I work for the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, and we are all about being squeaky clean and not giving Jesus the black eye because of shoddy finances. And I want to say it can be done, where it's legally, ethically, and in every other way appropriately separated, but it's complicated. And for a brand new church who doesn't happen to have that attorney, that specialist, it's usually not a wise way, because you end up spending all this energy for something you don't know anything about how to do.
Right, totally. And, you know, if you're not, like you mentioned our friend in the South Bronx, you know, he had some background in that, and that does make sense. So, I mean, if we had to pick like what a typical church plant looks like, you know, it's you can easily use average, medium, whatever you want to use. What is it? I mean, people like, people often ask, right? Am I normal? Is this, do I have not enough money? Do I have too much money? I remember hearing years ago, well-known, you probably know his name, but since I'm about to critique and disagree, I won't share it. But he said, listen, don't even plant a church till you have $100,000 in the bank. You need $100,000 in the bank so you can bring in multiple staff. You know, as someone who's planted six churches, depending on how you count, four where I was the lead planter and two where I was the senior pastor, I never had $100,000 in the bank. Matter of fact, I can't imagine, like, well, how would you even do that? So it seems that church planting has gotten more and more expensive. And the stories that we hear sometimes at the big, you know, church plantapalooza conferences are, you know, we had four staff members and $100,000. What's normal? What does it look like? And, or maybe there's more than one normal. Talk to us about that.
So first, let me respond back to your friend. I'm going to guess that friend was white.
Yes.
Okay. Because one of the things we did, and this breaks down in the specialty report we did on race, is there's a lot of economic difference, and I would go so far as to say disparity, in the approaches taken based on the financial resources that you have. And the exciting thing to me is every planter at every economic level has figured out how to reach people for Christ. And sometimes that means there was money in the bank, and sometimes you are doing it on an absolute shoestring. But now back to your what is normal question.
Yeah.
First, I saw a consistent ratio of core group to attendee of 1 to 3 to launch day attendees. So let me give an example. If I had 30 people in my core group, that meant on, if I did a big launch day strategy, that meant 3 times that is 90 people showed up on launch day. If I had 300 people in my core group, I had 900 show up. So the what is normal is pretty much today, both before and during the pandemic, double digits. Somewhere in the 60 to 70 to kick off. Now the question is growing it. Is how much energy resources do I have to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry, which includes reaching out to their friends, neighbors, business associates who don't yet or might not yet have a relationship with Jesus or a church home in which to grow. The next piece we learned for normal is that most growth is slow and steady.
Right.
The surge growth is rare. It's wonderful. Right. We like to put them on platforms and say, tell us what God did. And usually there is a God story in that. But so often it is a gathering on some kind of launch event. And then for the next couple of weeks, it dwindles down and settles. And then from there, you grow. And now the question is, do I know how to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry? Do I have that passion, first and foremost, of inviting people to come to Christ? And Ed, just an aside, I was touched by how many, we asked the question, do you have an invitation, an opportunity for people to become a Christian? Yeah. How often? Yeah. And my first choice was weekly. I should have said probably almost weekly or, you know, virtually weekly, but I actually said just weekly. And the next was monthly and quarterly and annually. I was overwhelmed at how many church planners did that weekly, which tells me another way that they're wanting to say, how do I not be just for us who are gathered? Because that's the temptation to settle in and focus on building up those that God brought. But how do I keep reaching out to those that might not yet know Jesus and need to connect with us? And the trajectory, and you can see it in different charts in the reports, is the year after year, it's generally incremental and steady.
Yeah, and I think that's important because I think there's, you know, we elevate the crazy success stories. And I'm not saying that that's even wrong because I think that you know, people want to be inspired by this. So people are speaking at the conferences or writing articles. They sometimes, there's a little bit of, I want to be careful how I say this, but maybe I'll just say it. There's a little bit of like, it's almost like church planting pornography. It's like an unrealistic depiction of an experience you're not going to have that distracts you from the real and very wonderful thing. The real and very wonderful thing looks like you start, you might have a group of people that are in the tens, not the hundreds, and you grow from there. Not, you know, I just started preaching through the book of Leviticus and 1,000 people came and God just, and then what happens is people say, I want to be like that. And what I would say is focus on the wonderful thing, but the wonderful thing of incremental growth means we have to think maybe about finances. And so because most churches aren't going to blow up with 300 people in the second year, so what advice from what you learned, you know, I want you to comment on the data. I want you to tell us more about the data, but then I want you to give advice to church planters about how they should think about the financing of their church plant in light of what you learned.
The more the pastor tries to fund it personally, as opposed to reaching out and involving a core group and others, but the more personal funding, actually the smaller the church starts, the slower it grows, and the more it's still dependent on the pastor's personal financing. So really reaching souls is also reaching pocketbooks, that your vision needs to include engaging as many others as possible in, quote, owning the vision, the mission, and being part of it. Second, we learned that financial self-sustainability begins at about 76 in attendance, which really, that surprised me. I thought it would be higher. And I say begins at that, which all says, okay, so at what point are we going to launch? And do we launch a bunch of times? You know, our first public gathering, our grand opening, our big fall Sunday event, where we just keep taking whoever God has brought so far and we just kind of relaunch and relaunch and relaunch to get those boosts that occur, because financially there comes a certain point where the people who support you kind of have an implied expectation of, this is starter money, buddy, or couple, or whoever it is, that more and more launch teams as opposed to individuals. This is starter, on the assumption that God is going to do something, you're going to lead something, and it's going to figure out how to pay its own way. We have a little chart that says what percent are self-supporting after, at the start, at launch, at year one, at year two, at year three. And the vast majority that are going to have a sustainability are self-sustaining financially by year three, and most far sooner than that.
Hmm. And that's important, because, and I want us not to miss that, we do recognize that self-sustainability is takes longer, and or could be faster in some settings. Settings make a difference. But in church planning and missiology, we want to see things move to self-sufficiency. Your research shows that total gifts from churches is actually equal to denominational giving. And again, it's going to be wildly different. We acknowledge that, all these different traditions. You know, one denomination funds, you know, gives $50 and a gift card to Walmart and says, good luck. Others, you know, are funding people as fully funded clergy. So with knowing that big diversity, it does seem a little surprising that denominations are now giving, or churches are giving, about the same. What does it say about the ongoing role of networks and denominations in church planning?
Well, first, that pie chart represents averages. I doubt there's no church that 19% of their funding came from nearby churches, 19 came from the denomination. It's more like, of church funding, 19% got a big chunk from their denomination. And of church funding, 19% got a big chunk from nearby churches. And so I'm seeing that funding of churches, like everything else, is becoming more localized. That the church that I'm part of right now, which is a church plant, and it's planting other churches and campuses, that we're going to have much deeper pockets and inspiration to help start a church 20 miles away than we do to give to our denomination's master fund, which then disperses to churches we've not heard of. So the heartbeat today is, I want to be able to pray for it, go visit it, help out, see it, and put my body where my money is. So the direction is much more moving local, I would suspect.
Yeah, of course, we would say that's probably less efficient and more engaging at the same time. And those things can both be true. But again, I think there's a perception that maybe if you're, you know, Nazarene, or if you're, you know, in ARC or X29 or Southern Baptist or Presbyterian, that the denomination is sending out. And in most denominations, there are some who fully fund a person, but it is very unusual, and maybe not what we should have as an expectation. One of the things too, and we're going a little long today, but I think this is something everyone's very interested in. So your research showed that more than half of church planners depend on a side gig, side job, or their spouse's employment for funding. Does the future look more bivocational? Can you tell from this? I'm trying to remember how we compared it to years past. Sometimes the sample is just limited because we don't get as many bivocational, but what do you think about for the future?
Well, I spent over a year talking with people like you, Ed, and saying, what kinds of questions should we ask? And talking with church planters and saying, what do you want to know about others? And I was amazed at how many I said, you know, so, like, are you self-supporting financially? Oh, yeah, yeah. By the way, does your spouse have a full-time job? And where are your medical benefits coming from? From my wife, and she works, and this and that. So really, you're counting that as part of your support. Oh, yeah. So it's much more, I don't know that was a factor back in the era of much more single wage earner families. Today's median is much more towards the double wage earners. So that's just become part of reality. And that's why I thought, well, I should probe that a little bit more. I should also probe, I'd heard different church planners, oh yeah, we maxed out our credit cards to start the church. And I'm just cringing and thinking, oh no. Yeah. But I'd heard that enough that I thought, okay, let's ask about personal savings And yes, you put your money where your heart is. And all the churches I planted and been part of, you know, we gave proportionally a whole lot, but that was not the whole. And I needed to work harder to go out and do the ask with other people.
Yeah, makes sense. Last question. Your research indicated that greatest growth by percentile happened in churches that had zero paid staff members, and churches with a part-time pastor grew faster than those with a full-time pastor. I don't know. That might not be encouraging to some pastors who are like, you know, I'd really like to have a full-time role, but there are some statistical things. What should aspiring church planners take away from those findings?
That really surprised me. In fact, I was at a conference recently and sat down with a denominational executive that had just mentioned that disproportionately most of their church planners were bivocational or co-vocational. And I said, by the way, does that, and he was talking about coaching these planners. I said, well, since you kind of know their worlds, tell me something. Because they can't do all the ministry themselves, they have a job on the side. Does that mean that they tend to be better at releasing ministry to God's people in the church and equipping others? And he said, yeah, that would make perfect sense logically, but that is absolutely not the case. They are just working towards exhaustion, trying to do a part-time paid pastoral thing, but it's in reality full-time, and then doing a job on the side. So I absolutely cheer, realizing that around the world, you look at India, China, any number of explosively growing churches, and they're starting as house churches where people have other incomes and they're doing this on the side. That easily could be the future in the United States. But to grow anything on scale, if that's what you think God is doing, if that's where you think the harvest is, that generally, the sooner you can work with people's giving in order to be fully focused on that mission, I'm going to give a value judgment here, I think the better. Now, does that mean that you don't have the fruit spiritually? Because we did ask about conversion growth and other kinds of growth. Delightfully, we saw conversion growth at all levels. How sustainable long-term is it? Jury's still out.
Yeah, and we should note that these kinds of studies, now Warren and I have been in these kind of partnerships for a long time, these kinds of studies do not necessarily pick up people who don't speak English, for example, or more than one language, but they... Well,
yeah, and actually we did translate the survey into Spanish and French to try to do that. But I think the harder thing was people who, I mean, church planners are just, we had to like pull nails to say, really, 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 just give me 15 minutes.
Yep. Yep.
Stop from winning the lost and doing the 43 things on your to-do list today and help the greater body of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say, you know, so think in mind that you know, that immigrant from, you know, who doesn't speak any of the major languages or that that person who we couldn't even get to. So we recognize God's doing all kinds of things in all different ways. But this kind of research really helps us to think well about church planning. So I want to encourage you, go to the, you can find it in the show notes and you'll take it over the ECFA link. Remember, that's Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability link. Go to their thing where it talks about surveys and research, and you'll be able to find lots more information that I think you'll find helpful from somebody who really loves church planting in that Warren Bird. Warren, thanks for coming and having the conversation with us on the New Churches podcast.
I've listened to many, many of the podcasts and learned a lot from them. Thank you.
Thanks, Em. We'll be back in our next episode.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.